The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro, Micro and Small Cap News with sharepickers.com on Saturday the 15th of August 2026. I say I was going to do this yesterday, but again, heatwave. What the heck is going on, eh? And by the time I sort of got round to it, I couldn't have spent any time in my office. Yeah, I was literally like a hippo in a hot tub, sweating like a pig, a hippo pig, whatever it is. Anyway, so it's cool. I'm doing it this morning, Saturday. Coming up, look at the indices, look at the commodities, macro story, the biggest rises and fallers on sharepickers.com, and one stock worth researching. Is this legal inside information I'm about to impart on this stock? Because I quite like it. You can get some information on this company before it gets released by the company itself. And I think the news is quite good. Okay? Remember, everything here is just information. It is not investment advice. Sharepickers.com, summer sizzling hot code discount is POD40, just for you podcast listeners, okay? POD40, all one word, capital P, capital O, capital D, 40. Go to sharepickers.com, scroll down to see the login or sign up, and put your name in, your details, and you'll see a little title says, have a coupon, and just click on that, a little box will open up, and type in POD40. I was corrected that summer didn't end at the end of July, so I've extended this till the end of this month. Where are we? 15th. Pretty much halfway through already, August. So you get 40% off. So that means a yearly membership is £149, down from £249. And that works out pretty much the equivalent of half a pint of beer a week. That's all. And like I said, you know, one feeds your wealth and is good for you. The other one feeds your belly and is bad for your health. So check it out, POD40. Okay, and macros. Let's do a couple of headlines first, okay? Electric vehicle sales targets could be cut after pressure from car makers. About time. I think it's got to get to the stage. I've got an electric car because I've got solar panels and a battery, two Tesla Powerwalls. And to be honest, it literally has cut my bills to zero. I'm earning money over the summer because of the sun, of course. And they fill the batteries up, you avoid peak time. But I also now fill my car up. And for free, pretty much. And some days with Octopus, you get negative prices, which means you get paid to fill your batteries in your car up. So, but I think it's got to be a no-brainer for people. The market's got to work naturally. Rather than government stepping in every single time with regulation. Listen, electric vehicles, when they get to the stage, and they will, because the technology is getting better and better and better. And I think that I heard a guy from one of the big websites, Cars, Autotrader, say that now, I think in 2026 so far, the average electric car versus a comparable model in ICE cars are cheaper. Of course, there's some discounts going on there, but they'll get cheaper with mass adoption. We're still at, 5%, I think? Less than 5% of people in the UK have EVs. And of course, there's more people, you know, buy EV cars, they become cheaper and cheaper, mass production. The technology will get up to sort of 500-600 miles now. I think my car at the moment is maximum 300 miles on a full charge, which is more than enough. There's some kind of stat, isn't it? Something like, I think 60% of people do about less than 50 miles a day. So there's plenty. We do less than that, so we don't need that. But for other people, of course, if you're driving long distances, then you probably need that 600 miles. And of course, the range will get better, the charging will get faster, and the prices will come down. In the end, it'll be a no-brainer to get an EV, especially if you've got, you know, solar panels and all that stuff. Electric vehicles target set to be cut. US says dozens of countries help China dodge Trump's tariffs. Trump. Did you see, was it last week? He announced priority access to Truth Social. It's hilarious, it's called Truth Social, isn't it? That's Trump summed up. But essentially, I think you pay $100,000 and you get VIP access to Trump's tweets on market-moving information before the rest of the market. This is insane, isn't it? It's like it's gone beyond insane now. It's got the same way, nothing surprises me, but this sort of does. Because essentially, this is insider information he's giving on market move information for people who pay. this can no, I don't know if it's going to happen. I think there's some people, you know, launching a legal challenge against it. But it is nuts. Imagine if a CEO of a company, of a listed company in the UK, said, "Oh, listen, if you sign up to our subscription service, we'll give you, you know, trading updates, all that before it actually happens, and we've released it." You can't do that. It's illegal. It's illegal. It's just nuts. Also, another bit of thing here: Harvey Nichols, owner, bought by Sports Direct. So Harvey Nichols has been bought by Sports Direct. There's a clash of cultures there, isn't it? But it's Mike Ashley. Is he a genius? I think he is, isn't he? He's just acquiring all these, you know, strong brands that are struggling. He's acquiring, taking costs out. I've just looked at the, some of the companies he's acquired recently. So Harvey Nichols, okay? Jeeves and Hawkes, you know, the ultimate upmarket tailor. Agent Provocateur, obviously Sports Direct. Evans Cycles, Wiggle, Jack Wills, Slazenger, Carlton, Donne, Caramore, Kangol, LA Gear, Sondico, Muddy Fox, Frog Bites are just some of the companies Fraser Group, which is headed by Mike Ashley, of course, has acquired. And I think it's amazing, isn't it? Some of these brands. I mean, you know, they've struggled. They've maybe internal problems, but he's sort of turning them around. The share price of Fraser's been doing quite well, actually. Anyway, and one other thing. Oh, in fact, where's the other thing I saw? Another headline here. I lost $14,000 in a month. Investors hit by Korean stock market's wild swings. Now, have you seen the KOSPI? It's still up by, I think, about 40%. It's sort of, but it's up by 116% to its peak from the start of the year. That's an indices, this is. And it, now it's down by 23% this year. It has been down sort of 40%. So it's still up. What's it up at the moment? It's still up 65% this year, the KOSPI, the Korean indices. And that's largely because it's fueled by AI, and these, you know, chip makers make up big, so Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix represent roughly about 40% of the market. When they rally, about 50% of the market. So the swings are crazy. And apparently people are going in leverage because single stock leverage ETFs, as if it isn't volatile enough. And people are sort of, you know, well, they're getting stopped out on margins. Whenever there's a drop, they have to put up more cash. They get stopped out and lose lots of money. One bit of advice I heard, was it on Master Investor? I don't know who the guy was recently, but talking about the bond markets. And he's very knowledgeable about that. Very interesting. But, you know, at the end, they asked for one piece of advice. And the advice he gave was never do leverage. I sort of agree with that. It can ruin you. You can get rich fast and broke fast. So honestly, I know people don't want to hear it, but the way to get sort of, you know, wealthy over time is as steady as you go, pretty much, you know. And if you try and get rich fast, you'll pretty much skint yourself. And I said, there were three partners originally at Berkshire Hathaway. There's Warren Buffett, of course, Charlie Munger, and another guy, exactly, I don't even know his name, who preferred leverage. And literally, he bankrupted himself. And Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett obviously didn't do that. The slow route. But anyway, one other thing. Before I look at the commodities and stuff and the indices, El Nino, which I've been talking about a lot, is this. It's now showing record-shattering intensity, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, for short. They're the ones to sort of pay attention to. There's about three agencies, but there's nearly a 70% chance that the building super El Nino, they call it super, in fact. Scientific administrations and organizations don't call it super, they call it strong, and that means it's above 2 degrees above average ocean temperatures. And it's looking like it's beaten that already. But 70% chance the building super El Nino will be the strongest such event on record, according to NOAA. So previously, NOAA had been projecting this event would likely rank amongst the largest El Nino events in historical history. The change in forecast largely stems from how rapidly this El Nino is intensifying, along with computer model guidance, nearly unanimously showing it will peak in late fall, early winter, at a level that is stronger than previously thought. So El Nino, sort of NOAA's records go back to 1950, and so this can be stronger than that. So this is a quote here. This is a genuinely remarkable event, said University of California climate scientist Daniel Swain, in a YouTube briefing on El Nino broadcast this week. He said, we're already at record-breaking or record-tying territory now, and we're expected to skyrocket. Never has there been an El Nino this intense, nor has a powerful El Nino taken place against a background of climate that was as hot as it is now. And these factors make it impact somewhat of a wild card, experts say, with the effects of global warming acting in concert with El Nino to heighten the severity of heat waves and other disasters. So as you know, well, I don't know if you know, but I've got some exposure to commodities because it's soft commodities, they're called, of course, and that's coca, coffee and sugar, because it's likely, I mean, they're quite volatile, not as volatile as, you know, small, well, they sort of are. You can understand the price action on some small cap stocks charts, but these seem to have gotten down on a day for, I can't find out the reasons. But coca, for example, hit a low of $2,950 back in February this year. It's now doubled, and I think it's nowhere near the highs. Now, the funny thing with cocoa is the season this year was very good. The season just gone. So the picking has started at end of last year, started this year. And it was very good, bumper crop. I think it was 422,000 tons of cocoa beans. And two countries produce 60% of the world's cocoa. So it's Ghana and Ivory Coast, I think. So the reason why the share price of coca, it's, by the way, it's an ETF or ETC, Exchange Traded Commodity. Wisdom Tree is the fund manager, and it's COCO is ticker. So there's a fight here between a bumper harvest this year versus what they see if this El Nino plays out, a really bad harvest for the next 2 years. So if that happens, I think it's, you know, the highs are going to be broken, recent highs definitely, and maybe even previous highs. Back in 2025, it hit $14,000 a ton. We're now at sort of $5,700. And of course, I also have sugar and coffee for the same reasons. So check that out. They're all from Wisdom Tree, but coffee is COFF is ticker, and what else is there? There's sugar, SUGA is ticker there. They're called ETCs. So they can be quite volatile, so don't go crazy. But I think as a commodity play, they could do well over the next few years. Let's have a look at the performance of the indices, first of all. So last week, the worst performing indices, even though it hit highs, I think it came back a bit, was the FTSE 100, down 0.83%. Is that correct? I thought it did really well this week. Let's have a look. FTSE, UKX. Oh, yeah, no, it rolled over. So last week was a good performance. It rolled over a little bit. Dow Jones, second worst performer, down 0.25%. Stock 600 down 0.25%. Small cap indices flat. The FTSE 250 up. That's hit all-time highs, actually. FTSE 250 up 0.38%. Where is it for the week? Let's have a look here. Yes, 24,867. It's getting close to that 25,000 mark. What else was there? AIM All Share up 0.57%. S&P 500 up 0.6%. A rebound this week for the American indices. All World Index, which is largely weighted to the US, of course, 0.63%. NASDAQ up 0.74%. And a Russell 2000 up 1.17%. So let's look at the performance for the year now. Russell 2000 is the best, up 23%. NASDAQ up 15%. S&P up 14%. Dow Jones up 12%. Stock 600 up 10%. FTSE 250 up 10% or 10.5%. The AIM All Share is the worst performer, 4.5%. FTSE 100 up 8.4%. And small cap up 9.19%. Gold has a bit of a rally off the bottom here. So it as we all know, gold sort of spiked out at $5,500 back in January. And it's since sort of grinded lower. It's gone below the 200 moving average in June. But now, and I always said this, you know, if you're looking for a bottom in a chart or a share price, just put on a 20-day, 50-day moving average and wait until it starts closing above that. And gold did, when was that? Was it last week? Yeah, the 5th of August. It had it first crossed the 20-day last week, but it had a powerful day, up 3.67% on the 5th of August. It broke through the 50-day moving average, went up to 4,300. Now it's at 4,400, and it's hitting its head on the underside of the 200-day moving average. So it'll be interesting to see if it comes back a little bit here. But, it's we've maybe seen a temporary bottom here in gold. That may be the support level. Run about $4,000, actually. It's funny, is it technicals? You can look at everything you want. Supply, demand of gold, whatever. But when it comes to round numbers, technical sort of work sometimes, they're like magnets. They bounce off round straight numbers. So 4,000 there, it's now rallied to 4,400. So it's like 10% in the last few months. So I have been looking into a gold ETF. But at the moment, it's literally, whenever you've got to invest or make a new investment, be careful, because you the possibility that not only diluting your existing holdings, but diluting to a poorer performer. I mean, that's what you don't want to do. It's called diversification, apparently, it's been called. And I think the commodities I hold, the soft commodities, have decent potential. So I'm thinking, am I going to go for that? So what was the, there's an ETF. So if you want to look at a gold ETF, iShares Gold Producers. So if you want to look at, it's BlackRock, of course, iShares, but the ticker there is SPGP. Okay, SPGP, Sugar Papa. Golf Papa, and it's obviously it's bounced with the gold price. But if you don't want to do individual, assessment of individual gold, if you go for an individual gold producer, of course you get more upside and more downside, more volatility. But if you go for an ETF, it largely tracks the gold price. A couple more things then. Brent crude, it's off the bottom at what, 71. Bucks a barrel. That was back in July. It sort of peaked out then at 101 in 24th of July, but now it's in between that range, sort of 87 or 88 bucks a barrel, pretty much. Bitcoin, it's going nowhere. It's forming a sort of base here, though. It looks like a flat base. Of course, if markets roll over, I wouldn't put it past Bitcoin going lower, but it seems to be holding. It bounced off that sort of 58,000 level. It's now at 62,000, but it seems to have resistance at 67. And support at 58. But who knows, Bitcoin? What's the use of it anymore? It's like, gold is useful, isn't it? And in certain things, but it's also been a store of value for centuries. What is Bitcoin used for anymore? But you understand when people are most bearish on a certain commodity stock, cyclical plays, they tend to go very well. By the way, charts of interest this week. I've been getting more alerts of house builders. Rightmove is making a move. RMV, of course, a while back did a profit warning saying they're going to spend more on AI and all that stuff, and it took a bit of a hammering. But now, Rightmove is, it seems to be making a nice little cup and handle movement, well, bowl shaped, almost like a Nike tick at the bottom. It's broken the 200-day moving average. It's at 5.11 a share. It did get down to, at the lows, £4 a share. It's looking like it's rallying. And also Persimmon, I've had a few notifications on that. Very similar formation there. A bull feature on the chart. It's a low of like 9.99, 10 quid. And now it's at 11.87. And trying to get above that 200-day moving average. So it's interesting. House builders are sort of, hitting bottoms, it seems. Okay, let's look at this sort of on sharepickers.com. Biggest movers and fallers of the week. Now, of course, I only cover sub 300 million market cap companies that are profitable or forecast to be profitable. Why? Because they are the most sustainable risers and best performers, or 60-70% of the best performers over a 5-10 year period are small caps that are profitable or forecast to be profitable. So let's have a look at the rises and falls this week. For the week, in fact, one of the best performers this year, which is hard-eyed, it's been a 10-bagger. HDD has been the worst performer this year, down 16%. Career Networks, which is a cybersecurity company, I've never really got them. I understand it's got a high-quality product, but they've gone through a dodgy period where they had no profit. Now their profit is going to be forecast to be negligible at best. Where are they? Down 13% this week. It had a big sell. It's quite illiquid and just dropped down a couple of, 10% this week for no reason. But forecast, right, for Carrero is they are a market cap of sort of 38 million, 35 million enterprise value. They're going to be forecast to do 21.4 million pounds top line, and that's 14% growth and 156% net profit growth. Sounds good, but that net profit growth is just 296K. Puts them on a PE of 132. So, I mean, a lot of people, obviously with software companies, they'll use a annual recurring revenue multiple. For 27, they're expected to do 12% top line growth, 24 million, and 350% net profit growth, which brings them onto a reasonable PE, not cheap, but 29 times. So who knows? If you know a lot about that kind of thing, maybe it's worth, but like I said, it's not cheap, but these type of companies aren't cheap. But that's Carrera. It's had a bit of a fall off this week. What else is there? Movers, back to Movers. Worst three performers this week. Hard-Eyed, Carrero, and what else was there? Pulsar, P-U-L-S. Yeah, don't think much of that company. Intuitive Investments as well. That's, I think they've just delisted, haven't they? Because I think they're changing their category to a fund of some kind or whatever. To be included in some kind of indices to make it more liquid, I think. But they are a software company that's supplying China with lottery, digital lottery. So it's a huge market. It's a bit speculative, of course, but it does rally. Best performance this week, unbelievable, Shoezone. Yeah, technical bounce. Secondly, the Mission Group. The Mission Group, actually, the forecasts look decent on it. And also Shield Therapeutics. Oh, and Zeros Technology. That's one I own, of course. In fact, I connected with a guy who works there on LinkedIn this week. And he seems quite bullish. I'm going to have a chat with Neil soon from Xeros. It's one of these story stocks that I think has validity. I said they've got a global washing machine manufacturer signed up. They've got three more in technical verification. That takes a while. But if they get another one, then to me, you know, that validates the technology completely. And washing machine technology hasn't changed for decades. So they say once one comes to market, you know, every manufacturer will jump on the bandwagon because they don't want to be left behind. So it's worth looking at that. The technology is very good. Xeros XSG, like it's a loss-making stock. One of the only ones I hold is loss-making. And like it's a blue sky story. You know, it's always good to have one of these in your portfolio, I think. Many of them don't play out, but I do like the technology here. And I think this is, you know, these a global manufacturer using the technology sort of validates it in my mind. But if it does play out, it's a multi bagger. It's one of these dream stocks, you know. And as we know, a lot of them don't play out. And I've played around in these kind of stocks for years and years, especially during, low interest rates where raising money was very easy. So that the story, it was the main thing. And, you know, you can multi-baggers. Check that out. So, finally, a company worth looking at. All right. Now, this is not investment advice. These are just ideas. Some people say there's no idea and no such thing as a bad idea. I don't believe that. Sometimes they're dreadful ideas. But I think this is a good idea. I'm biased because I hold a few shares in this company, okay? Now, the company is Everplay. EVPL is ticker. Now, it used to be called Team 17, and it was a stock market darling. They've gone through a lot of change, all right? Just to give you the metrics on this, market cap about 344 million, enterprise value 294. The last set of results on the 31st of 12, 25, that net cash of pretty much 50 million. I always like a company, and they're profitable. So I always like a company, though, with a rock-solid balance sheet. Now, what's interesting about this is, in fact, let me take you through the history of Everplay. So they listed 2018, May, okay? So during the IPO, a cracking performance. They floated on AIM at 165 a share, achieving open market capitalization of 217 million. And they started rallying like hell. And then when the sort of the COVID lockdown happened, it was a boom time for all gamers, you know, gaming companies, because everyone was at home playing games or doing whatever. And the share price shot up to £8 a share. And then they started, of course, expanding. Like most games companies, let's, you know, make hay while the sun shines, not realizing that COVID is not going to last forever. But they did some acquisitions. So they did Story Toys, is an Irish edutainment app developer. It's recurring subscriptions and revenue tied to global licenses with Lego, Disney, Marvel, Netflix, of course. And then they acquired Astragon Entertainment in 2022. This is a German simulation developer and publisher. So they have construction simulator, police simulator, bus simulator. And of course, they've got their own sort of studio. They work with third parties as well, which they share revenue, but they've got their own IP as well, their own games. And so they acquired the intellectual property of a third party companies they're working with. One was Golf with Your Friends, and the one was Hell Let Loose. I was acquired in January 22 for $31 million. Okay? Now, in 23, there's a shocking profits warning. The share price plunged 40% in one day, pretty much. Long-serving and co-founder Debbie Bestwick, who's, you know, till this previous to that was like the hero, stepped down from executive leadership. Former Codemaster CEO Frank Sainia was appointed a non-executive director. And then they rebranded in 2025 to Everplay. And it was like to reflect that it wasn't just Team 17, because there was like three parts of the business there. It was Team 17, which was core indie publishing and the IP and all that stuff. Then there was Astragon, which is working simulations, and Story Toys, this licensed educational children's apps, okay? And since then, they've been evolving pretty much towards increasing the revenue share of first-party IP. So they're targeting their own games pretty much because they're higher margin, of course, less sharing of revenue, and they get lots from the back catalogue. So they've had a lot of CapEx recently because they've got a busy year this year. And I think it's very interesting because they, on, was it Thursday, they released a sequel to its sort of best-selling game, which is called Let Loose, okay? And the first Let Loose was based in World War II. It's a shoot-em-up kind of thing, first-person shooter thing. You could play with lots of other people, of course. So originally, Hell Let Loose in 2022, right, did very well, and it generated $100 million lifetime revenues, okay? Now, the current title, which is the follow-up, which was released on Thursday, is called Hell Let Loose Vietnam, and it's doing better than the original, which you would expect, to, you know, if you can evolve, because you've got a back catalogue of people, you've got people signed up to the first game, they love that kind of thing. So just looking at it, right, I've gone on Steam, which is like this global platform that ranks all games and has all stats on it. So the original World War II title peaked historically at 21,000 concurrent users, right? 21,385 on Steam. Hell Let Loose Vietnam has set an all-time record, 30,614 concurrent users on day one. That's a 43% better score than the original. And it's maintained about 27,000 plus 24-hour peaks on its opening weekend. So Vietnam has reached number two in the global top sellers on Steam at $39.99. And the deluxe version is $59.99. So they're estimating they've sold anywhere between 160,000 copies first day, pretty much. So the difference here is not only is it more successful than the original, but it's 100% owned first-party IP. So Everplay acquired Hell Let Loose in 2022. Unlike third-party publishing, where developer royalties consume a heavy share of net receipts, Everplay now captures 100% of publisher net revenue, significantly boosting gross margin capture. So I think here are five reasons why you should do some research on Everplay. Right? High margin first-party pivot. So they've shifted their revenue mix from third-party publishing royalties towards owned franchises like Hell Let Loose, Golf with Friends, and it directly expands operating gross margins. Number two, proven franchise scale. Vietnam's record 30K-plus launch validates underlying commercial demand and sets up multi-year, high-margin, downloadable content and seasonal monetization. Number three, free cash flow injection. As heavy multi-year capitalized development spend crests, so it peaks now, because they've been spending a lot this year on developing these games, okay? Major 26 releases, capital expenditure normalizes, releasing operating cash flow into free cash flow. Strong balance sheet. They're backed by substantial net cash, okay? Like I said earlier, they had $50 million at the end of last year. $50 million. I think that will come down a little bit short-term because of the R&D into these games that they're releasing. But, of course, that will be built back up. And fifthly, it's a compelling valuation, really. They're trading at a forward PE below 10 and an EV/EBITDA of 5.5 to 5.8. So they sit at a deep discount to historical average, which were their PE of 20 plus previously. Now, they're half that. And obviously this discount to global peers. Now, just looking at the forecast here. Now, if this game does well, and in their trading update, they said they would hit their. In fact, said the group's made this a trading update. When was this? On 28th of 7th. The group's major releases are taking place across H2 2026, including the first-party IP titles Hell Let Loose Vietnam and Bus Simulator 27, and third-party titles including War Dogs, Early Access, and Silver Pines. Hell Let Loose remains scheduled for launch on the 13th of August, that's this Thursday, following successful cross-platform playtest last weekend, and with wish lists and pre-order numbers highly encouraging. So they're saying they're going to hit your full-year results, and that will be... 175 million top line, adjusted EBITDA of 50.7 million. So they're only looking at, well, in fact, about 4% top line growth. But look at this, the net profit growth is expected to be 49%, right? And that net profit margin, 24% net margin. And they continue sort of single digit, mid-digit growth, 27, 28. But remember, one hit game, like we're seeing at the moment, can transform the metrics of a company. If you take a look at PlayStack with, what are they called, Truefin, you know, it literally, because people start looking at back catalogues and buying more of their stuff, so it can transform the entire back catalogue. And like I said, we are literally on a PE, looking at the forecast for 26, of 8, and EV earnings of 7. And this traditionally, this company had hit 20-plus PE. And like I said, they've been through a rough patch. And at the moment, I don't think people are going to believe, you know, not going to believe the turnaround, because it's taken a while. Like I said, it's pretty much gone down since, let me just get this up. It's pretty much gone down since in, they hit their peak pretty much. They came from, like I said, £1.65, £2 a share back in 2018. And then 2021, they were at £8.88, £9 a share. And then by literally end of COVID, 2022, shot down, all the way down. And it's been in a messy sort of range, downward range for a long time. So don't expect any upward, you know, explosion yet, because, of course, we've gone through a couple of rallies. In fact, recently went from, in Feb, it went 25. In March, so 25, it went from like £2 a share up to £4 a share by October 25. And then it's come back down. But I think there's a structural change. The changes they put in place are now coming to fruition. And so you're going to see, you know, higher cash, free cash flow and a successful game to boot. So it is, the share price is bumbling on the bottom here, but it's just above the 50-day moving average and 20-day moving average. It's not, the 200-day is about 285. The share price is 239 at the moment. So keep an eye on it, okay? Strong balance sheet. Looks like their big game this year has been a success. The only problem is, at the moment, the reviews are at, well, 57% or 58%. Every other game in their library is at 80%. And I've looked at this, and is this normal? Yes, apparently it does happen. So when they release a new game, you get some technical issues. You can test and test and test as much as you want in your local, you know, by developers. But until you release it to thousands and thousands of people who have all different setups, all different sort of, you know, chips in their computers, you're not going to find out some technical difficulties. So interestingly, when it was first released, they were at 50%. And now it's at 58% because they do hot fixes straight away. So they do uploads, and they, within 24 hours, 72 hours, they fix some of the fast fixes. And then in about sort of a week, 2 weeks, they get it all sorted, and that takes the review score up back to 70, 80%. And like I say, if you look back at all their games, pretty much, they're all 80% reviews, and so this will get towards that. But what's encouraging, like I said, the peak has been over 30,000. This is, you know, 43% better than their last release, Hell Let Loose. So worth checking out. Now, it'll be interesting to see when a trading update comes out, because that trading update will say we're either going to hit expectations or exceed them, depending how well this game does. But I think it's worth a watch. EVPL, do your own research, please. This is just information. Like I said, I'm pretty biased because I hold some stock in this company. But do your own research. It's just an idea, just information. That's it. Don't forget, end of this month, you have 2 weeks left to get a 40% discount at sharepickers.com. Just go to sharepickers.com, scroll down, sign up there. You'll see a little box. There's a sentence in, have a coupon. Click on that. It'll reveal a box. Type in capital letters, POD40, no gaps, and you'll get 40% off, which is £149 for the year. And as long as you keep renewing, it'll stay at that level forever. Okay? No one does that, do they? Everyone puts the prices up, you know, over time. So, and that's the price of literally a jumbo sausage from the chippy. That's all, on a weekly basis. That's it. Thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. Speak you next week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Please do your own research.